This is Washington Watch with Tony Perkins, your daily voice in Washington, D.C. on the issues of faith, family, and freedom. And now, here's your host, Family Research Council President Tony Perkins.
Well, not quite. Sandy Rios filling in for Tony today. He has a much-needed break, but you're going to hear his voice later in the show, and I will explain that. I do the morning show for American Family Radio from 8 to 9 a.m. Eastern Standard Time. I also represent the American Family Association in Washington. So that's who I am, if you're interested. And let's proceed, because there is so much news. As you know, this morning, it seems like, you know, months now, because the news cycle runs so fast, you forget. But President-elect Donald Trump has appointed Rex Tillerson, the CEO of ExxonMobil, to be the Secretary of State. Now, the reviews are mixed. Rex Tillerson, of course, is fabulously successful as a businessman. ExxonMobil has the economy of a small country, and he's been at the helm of that for many years. He has lots of contacts all over the world, and I think that's why Donald Trump chose him. But one question that many people have is his connection to Russia. In fact, that seems to be the focus for many people in their discussion. In fact, Bloomberg reported that since the late 90s, he's been doing business and become really very good friends with Vladimir Putin. And many people are concerned about that. Marco Rubio, Senator John McCain. In fact, you're going to hear Senator McCain with Tony coming up in just a few minutes. But I have asked someone who I would think would know well exactly what Tillerson's role and relationship is with Vladimir Putin, because David Satter is a Russian expert. He is currently the senior fellow at the Hudson Institute and a fellow of the Johns Hopkins University School of Advanced International Studies. But for years, he was the Moscow correspondent at the Financial Times of London. He was a special correspondent on Soviet affairs of the Wall Street Journal. He speaks fluent Russian. He's lived in Russia. He's written book after book on Russia. Movies have been made of his books. The most recent one was It Was a Long Time Ago, and It Never Happened Anyway, Russia and the Communist Past. And his name is David Satter. Hi, David. Thanks for joining me.
Hi, Sandy. How are you? Good to be with you.
Really good. Very nice to hear your voice, David. And all I know is what I read. There is supposedly a great shadow over Rex Tillerson because of his relationship with Vladimir Putin. What do you know about it, and do you view that as a negative?
I don't know much about his relationship with Putin, except the only thing I know is what's been in the papers, that he's concluded very big deals with Putin. ExxonMobil has been very active in Russia, and that he's gotten awards from the Russian government. I don't doubt Mr. Tillerson's integrity or his competence or his wide-ranging connections in countries all over the world. The real question here is, as a businessman dealing with very pragmatic questions, is he aware of the evils that exist in Russia? And in making friends with Putin, is he aware of some of the crimes that Putin has committed and that he's been involved in? Unfortunately, his role as Secretary of State is going to be very different from the career he's made as the head of ExxonMobil. He's going to have to think not just about pragmatic questions, not just about profit, but about fundamental moral questions. There's no indication that he has any experience in doing that. Doesn't mean that he's not a moral person. I'm sure he is, but his professional activity has in no way required him to think in these terms. And now he's going to be in a situation in which really the moral questions are absolutely fundamental and far more important than any pragmatic arrangements that he may make. So this is the real question that's hanging over this appointment.
David, when I first got really acquainted with you was after you wrote your first book that I knew about Russia, Age of Delirium, The Decline and Fall of the Soviet Union. And one of the things I learned from you was that it wasn't, capitalism didn't work in Russia because there was no moral fiber. But does that mean, you know, when the Soviet Union fell apart, was it just immoral that American companies would go and do business? Wasn't it natural? I mean, in itself, it's not a bad thing that an American company went into Moscow after the Soviet Union fell apart to do business, is it?
Well, here's the problem. An American company working in Russia is rapidly confronted with the kind of conditions that prevail in Russia. Now, ExxonMobil, if I'm not wrong, has done several deals with Rosneft, which is the big Russian state oil company. Rosneft was created in its present form after the arrest of Mikhail Kharkovsky, the head of the Yukos oil company. In the aftermath of that arrest, Yukos was broken up, and pieces of it were taken by Rosneft. And the arrest of Kharkovsky was completely arbitrary. It was motivated not by by specific criminal acts. It was motivated by the fact that Kharkovsky financed opposition political parties. So whether he likes it or not, Rex Tillerson was involved indirectly in the criminal activities of the Russian leadership.
Mm.
So what you know, we have a concept of in business called due diligence. You have to know who you're doing business with. The very success of ExxonMobil suggests that possibly Rex Tillerson didn't know, or that he didn't pay attention, or that he didn't want to know. You know, these are questions that will come up, I think.
Oh, I think you're right.
When it's time for him to be confirmed.
Yes, and David, I want to, before I run out of time, precious time with you, by the way, John McCain will be joining us in a few minutes. John McCain has some serious concerns about that, so he's going to weigh in. But I want to pivot just a little bit, because as you well know, a centerpiece of the news cycle now is this allegation that the Russians hacked and caused Hillary Clinton to lose the 2016 presidential election. You know, they're reporting that our that the CIA is affirmatively stating that Russia was the hacker, and they actually did willfully interfere with our election. The FBI is saying something different. But I want to know what you know about that. We only have about 6 minutes left here, and I want to make sure I have time with you. What do you know about that, and what's your perspective?
Well, I don't think I know more than what has been in the press, but I do have some experience with these things. And I would say that for the Russians to seek to hack into the emails of the Democratic leadership, that's pretty much what one would expect them to do. On the other hand, I'm skeptical of the claims that there was a strategy to elect Hillary Clinton president. Usually, they don't operate that way. It's more a case of them trying to discredit the American political system in the eyes of Russians. Because remember, for them, the first priority is not the United States. It's their own country. And that makes sense. They want to show Russians that Americans are just as bad as they are, and that they shouldn't be impressed by the seeming appearance of a democratic election in the United States. Actually, everything is fixed, everything is rigged in advance, and here's the proof. Various pieces of information have been coming out, reports from the CIA. I fully support the idea of having congressional hearings and getting to the bottom of this. But I think there is a real tendency on the part of the Democrats now to try to use this to their advantage and to ignore the real reasons why they lost the election. I mean, Hillary and her team posed as being very tough on Russia. Well, I can tell you from personal experience that for 8 years, they overlooked, closed their eyes, ignored, and were blind to the real information, you know, vital information about the situation in Russia. And this was at a time when they had full access to intelligence information, and it was their job to understand what was going on. So I think they're being a little bit dishonest. But nonetheless, it is an important question. It's something we need to get to the bottom of. My guess is that at the end of it, we'll find that there's strong indications that they did interfere either directly or more likely through proxies, but that they did so not so much to tilt the election one way or the other as to discredit it in the eyes of Russians.
How interesting. You know, David, this is shot in the dark. Because you've lived abroad so much, in fact, recently, I didn't even know you were back in the States. What is your take?
I am now.
Yes, and I didn't know that. What's your take on Julian Assange? You know, with the WikiLeaks case, Julian Assange said, you know, they were leaking the Podesta emails, which were as damning as anything that some Russian hacker allegedly got from the DNC. The Podesta email were the most damning. But Julian Assange said the Russians had nothing to do with that. I don't know what you think of him as a character. I want to know. What do you think?
Well, I think that Julian Assange is a very eccentric person, very irresponsible. But my guess is that he's telling the truth. He probably does, but that doesn't mean the Russians didn't do it, by the way. That only means that he believes they didn't do it. That he's sincerely saying what he believes to be the truth.
You know what, David, I'm sorry. I have to interrupt you because this reminds me of a story you told me once about being doubly worked by the KGB, two different ways. You know, we're not used to thinking that way, about the double game and the mind games.
No, we don't think that way at all. And what's really sad is that the people in our government who are charged with supposedly understanding Russia don't think that way either. Which is why they make mistake after mistake.
All right, so you think?
So I think that in the case of these leaks, Julian Assange, the information came to Julian Assange in a way that led him to believe he was acting independently. Because that's the way. I have no proof of this, but this is the way the Russians usually work. They usually try to accomplish things through other people. Many who oftentimes are not even aware of the way in which they're being used.
The irony here to me, and you alluded to this, is that the Democratic Party and members of the Democratic Party leaders have had such a long history with the Soviet Union and the romance, really, with the Soviets. I would say our current president is one of those who has romanced this, you know. Remember the promise he made, I'll be able to do a lot more when after this election. Tell Vladimir I'll have more information. And the reset button with Hillary Clinton.
This is kind of routine American dilettantism and stupidity. Of course, you know, the problem is that each president comes in thinking he knows something about Russia. The Russians themselves are geniuses at mimicry. And it's giving a false impression.
David, we are out of time.
Hate it.
I'm so sorry. I could talk to you forever. But,
Sandy.
David, it's great to talk. David Satter, and hope to talk to you too. Coming up next to Senator John McCain with Tony Perkins and his take on Rex Tillerson, the CEO of ExxonMobil. Be right back. Sandy Rios filling in for Tony Perkins on Washington Watch.
Hey, our Holy Land tour in March is filling up. Hello, everyone. I'm Tim Wildman, president of the American Family Association and American Family Radio. We only go one time a year to Israel, and that's in March. And our tour leaves the 9th and gets back on the 17th. And as I say, we don't have a whole lot of space left on this tour. So if you'd like to go with us and see the Holy Land, you need to give us a call at 800-FAMILIES, option 5, and we'll send you a brochure. 800 families with an S, option 5, and leave us your name and your address. We'll send you a brochure or go online at twholyland.com, twholyland.com. Again, we're going to Jerusalem and Bethlehem and Jericho and Nazareth and the Sea of Galilee and the Jordan River. all those places and much, much more. So join us on this very special tour of Israel in March.
Oops, there's a piece I missed a little bit.
Grandpa, why do we always pick up litter when we go hiking?
Well, we're just making it nicer for people who come after us a little bit. It's called stewardship.
My grandfather taught me that you should always leave a place better than you found it. That it's important to invest in the lives of your children and grandchildren, leaving them with a godly legacy they can build on. That's why I decided to set up a charitable gift annuity with the AFA Foundation.
It's called stewardship.
I know that my gift will support a ministry that honors the biblical principles I hold dear, and it's a way to invest in the future of our country. The AFA Foundation also arranged for me to have a steady fixed income, so I don't have to worry in the midst of changing times.
Call the AFA Foundation today to find out how you can set up a charitable gift annuity. Just call 800-326-4543, extension 345.
Hey, I'm Brant. So there's this guy named Jordan. He's a healthy guy. He's a dad of six, and he works as a guide in Alaska. And he goes to the doctor, true story, he goes to the doctor, and he's diagnosed with cancer, stage four. And here's the thing. He had switched earlier from medical insurance to MediShare, where Christians share each other's medical bills. So the question for Jordan and his wife, Jenny, was, is this actually going to work?
Our medical bills exceeded $160,000. MediShare members shared all our bills.
And it was about more than just the money, too. This is a real community.
MediShare is a family, a group of people that stick with you through the hardest times of your life. I just don't know how I could have done it without MediShare.
It's so worth looking into. There's a reason this is growing so fast. So if you want to find out more, here is a number for you. 855-PSALM-23. That's
855-PSALM-23. Welcome back to Washington Watch. I want to thank Sandy Rios for filling in for me. This interview I was able to tape a little bit earlier today. I had a chance to catch up with a good friend of mine, Senator from the state of Arizona. I wanted to talk about President-elect Donald Trump has selected ExxonMobil CEO Rex Tillerson to serve as Secretary of State. Now, the pick has fueled concerns on both sides of the aisle, the left and the right. Now, I wrote about his actions and my concerns during his tenure with the Boy Scouts a few years ago. You can read about that at TonyPerkins.com. That was in my update yesterday. In fact, if you're not getting that, go to TonyPerkins.com, sign up. But there's also those on Capitol Hill who have questions about some relationships he has with Russia and, you know, what kind of individual will he be? I mean, he's going to be the top diplomat for the United States. Does he have the background to do that? Joining me now to talk about this is the senator from Arizona, my good friend John McCain. Senator McCain, welcome back to Washington Watch.
Thank you, Tony, and thank you for all the good work you're doing. And as I enter another term, thanks to the generosity of the good people of Arizona, I look forward to continuing the relationship that you and I have, and I know I want our listeners to know that I rely on you for advice and counsel over many years, and I'm very grateful for it because you're a man of enormous integrity, and that's the last nice thing I'm saying about you.
Well, I appreciate that, Senator, and congratulations, and I do, in fact, look with great anticipation to your role with this Senate Armed Services Committee and the fact that we have to rebuild our nation's military. I mean, after this last 8 years, our military is demoralized. They've been decimated by budget cuts. So we've got a lot of work to do there. But
right. And could I mention, as you and I have talked previously, General Mattis is a leader that is absolutely admired by enlisted and officer corps alike, and I think he's going to be a excellent Secretary of Defense. And by the way, he was fired, you know, from his job under Obama, and it's because he stood up for what he believed in. And I think we're very fortunate to have him. And General Kelly, understand, he was Southern Command. He understands our border issues. He understands this drug situation where these opioids and Mexican manufactured heroin is coming into this country. So I'm a strong believer in both of them.
Well, Senator, you know, when you need a job done, you call the Marines. I mean, that's just the way it is.
There you go.
Well, let's talk about another pick that Donald Trump has made. And of course, the military, that they have their role, but the nation's top diplomat also has a critical role to play. And the president's selection of Rex Tillerson have some concern, both on the right and the left. In fact, you've said you've got some questions that you want to ask him when he comes before the Senate.
I certainly do, and I know our listeners know that the Constitution calls for advice and consent, and that's our job. We also understand that the people speak and they elect a president, and you give deference to the president's nominations. But I do have some legitimate, I think, but concerns about Mr. Tillerson. I believe that after Ukraine, he opposed the sanctions that were put on Russia. He has a very close relationship with Vladimir Putin. By the way, he was given an award by Vladimir Putin. I was sanctioned by Vladimir Putin. And that concerns me a great deal. I will meet with Mr. Tillerson, I'm sure, and we will have debate about it. But honestly, Vladimir Putin is a thug, a murderer, and a killer. And right now, as we speak, they are massacring innocent civilians and people in Aleppo, and it would not be happening if it were not for this administration's failed policy and Vladimir Putin weighing in on behalf of Bashar Assad when Bashar Assad was about to be replaced or thrown out. And so I have concerns about it, and I will be more than happy to listen to him, but there has to be a recognition at some point, which this obviously Barack Obama never understood, that Vladimir Putin is a thug, a murderer, and a butcher.
Right, and that's not only in his foreign activities, but domestically he's been cracking down on religious freedom in his country, and so we see these same trends there in Russia as well.
Sure, he's poisoned people. Boris Nemtsov, who was the leader of the opposition, former member of the previous government under Yeltsin, was murdered in the shadow of the Capitol. An expatriate in London was poisoned. I mean, this guy is the classic KGB. The list of his atrocities that have been committed under his orders goes on and on. So as long as we recognize Putin for what he is, and frankly, I would never accept an award from Vladimir Putin, because then you kind of give some credence and credibility to this butcher, this KGB agent, which is what he is.
Well, the argument there on the other side would probably be, well, we were doing business, we were trying to do a joint venture in the Arctic with the Russians, and so I was negotiating a deal. Is that part of the concern, though, that you have people that have never served in a role of public diplomacy, but more in making business deals, that there's certain things you can't make deals when it comes to certain things? You got to stand resolute on certain principles.
Yeah, and look, Ronald Reagan would talk to Brezhnev. He would talk to him in various different places. But the fundamental underpinning was peace through strength. And a
right.
Classic example of this is these cyber attacks. This administration, Barack Obama, has no policy, therefore no strategy, to counter cyber attacks that are probably one of the greatest threats to American security and democracies throughout the world. Because if you can alter the results of an election, then you have undermined and destroyed the fundamental principle
of
a free and fair election, which is the basis of democracy.
Senator, we're up against a break. Can you hold just a second?
I want to
come back and finish this conversation. We're up against a break. Folks, don't go away. We're talking with Arizona Senator John McCain, talking about the president's selection for Secretary of State Rex Tillerson. We're going to continue the conversation on the other side of this break. Don't go away. You're listening to Washington Watch.
making the most of your money. Here's Dan Celia.
Well, we've got a lot of positive things coming out in the economy. Of course, the markets being the big thing, but the most important is the economy. Finally, we get to talk a little bit about the economy and not just what the markets are doing, because I believe the markets are very, very real, not made up of the last 8 years of all kinds of false positives. I wrote an article last week that talked about the first 30 days of a president-elect and what has happened to the economy and why. Well, it's interesting to see some confirmation of that today. The National Federation of Independent Businesses said that their optimism index has jumped 3.5 points to a seasonally adjusted 98.4 in November. Now, this is something that I have always been very in tune with, and I talk about this every month for the last 10 years on my program, because I believe it's incredibly accurate, particularly as it relates to small business, the largest employer in the country. Now, 98.4 is the strongest since April of 2009. And it's only the third time since 2007 the optimism index has broken what is considered the above average territory. Very good news and confirmation that thousands of small businesses are feeling very good about the prospects of the future.
Want to hear more financial advice from Dan Celia? Then look for his podcast when you visit the website afr.net.
Welcome back to Washington Watch. I'm Tony Perkins. Glad you're with us on this Tuesday afternoon. My guest, Arizona Senator John McCain, we're talking about President-elect Donald Trump's selection of Rex Tillerson to serve as Secretary of State, the nation's top diplomat. Concerns being raised about his relationship with Russia. Senator, I want to continue that conversation when we look at the activities of Vladimir Putin giving an award to Tillerson. And, of course, that was all on the business side of things. But is that one of the concerns that you have someone who spent 40 years in the business world? And I'm all for business individuals coming into government. But there's some things that are just a little bit different when you compare business with public diplomacy as a representative from a government.
I'm sure you remember the words of the late Vladimir Ilyich, better known as Lenin, where he said, "We will sell the capitalists." The capitalists will hang themselves, and we'll sell them the rope to do it. Well, we are seeing, you know, the oil deals, and I understand why you would want to enter into a deal that makes money for your corporation. Exxon Mobil is probably one of the world's largest, if not the largest, corporation in the world. I understand those things, but at the same time, there are certain ethics and standards that we would expect for any American-based corporation or business. And frankly, being against sanctions after Vladimir Putin invaded, basically, Ukraine and partitioned it in violation of all international law and took Crimea, that leads to me to question, what about the issue of morality? There should be some certain standards, whatever business we are in. And again, honoring, accepting an honor from Vladimir Putin legitimizes Vladimir Putin. You see my point?
I do see your point. I think there's folks are asking those same questions, at least in the media we see that coming forth. But I'm curious from your colleagues, and let's focus on the Republican side, because, I mean, we're pretty certain where the Democratic members are going to be, unfortunately. But are there other concerns that are being expressed by your Republican colleagues on the Hill?
Yes, mainly they center around relationship with Russia. also some of the policies that when he was instrumental in leadership of the Boy Scouts, and it's admirable that he would be dedicated to the Boy Scouts, but some of his policies there, I think, are questionable. But again, I want to say...
Well, I would weigh in on that, Senator, because I spoke about that yesterday, because, in fact, he was at the helm when the Boy Scouts changed their longstanding policy about open homosexuality in the Boy Scouts. And it's had a dramatic effect on the organization, declining in its numbers, but I think damaged a century-old institution that had been training boys and helping them in the transition to manhood. And I guess my point with that, and most people don't realize the State Department and what's happened under Barack Obama, is how they've exported this leftist radical social policy, imposing this on other nations that are adamantly opposed to that. And so that's why it's a concern in the State Department that he would bring that type of orientation.
Well, I think there's another aspect of this, too, and I don't that is along those lines, and that is that... the Obama administration's Defense Department has spent more time on political correctness than on making the military trained, equipped, and ready to defend this nation. And that's another thing that's got to be turned around immediately. Hmm. And so, for example, I'm sure you may know that the Navy, the Secretary of the Navy, changed all the labels that we used to identify people's specialties in the Navy, such as yeoman,
right,
to take out the word man. I mean, it's crazy stuff. It's crazy stuff.
And how does that help you fight and win wars?
I think what it does, you ask any member of the military, they will tell you that their morale is not good,
and it
does affect their morale when all the emphasis is on political correctness, rather than training and operations and readiness to defend the nation in what is arguably the most dangerous time in the last 70 years.
The mission should be the mission. That is to defend America, to fight and win America's wars. It's not to advance any kind of political agenda or cultural agenda. Senator, I want to thank you for being generous with your time today. Always great to talk with you. And I look forward to working with you on a number of these issues in the coming months as we have an opportunity to correct a lot of the mistakes made by the Obama administration.
Well, I thank you, and I appreciate your advocacy and steadfastness in support of the principles and values that has made America what it is, and I'm glad to call you a friend.
All right. Thank you, Senator John McCain. Hey, to find out more, go to the website, tonyperkins.com, and you can find out more about the work that Senator McCain does. All right. I want to encourage you to continue listening to Washington Watch. On the other side of the break, Sandy Rios will be back. So good to talk with you. And remember, you and I have work to do. Stay plugged in, stay engaged, stay involved, make your voice heard. Don't go away. Washington Watch is right back after this.
One of the great freedoms that most Americans enjoy is the ability to get involved in political campaigns. But what about pastors? Unfortunately, due to a little-known amendment that was passed in 1954 at President Lyndon Johnson's urging, churches and other nonprofit organizations are prohibited from making statements for or against a candidate for public office if they want to remain tax-exempt. This is just one of the many problems with the Johnson Amendment. Not only does fear of IRS action put a chill on the free speech of pastors, it restrains other nonprofit organizations from participating in the debate of public policy in their area of expertise. In addition, the IRS only rarely enforces the Johnson Amendment, causing widespread confusion about what constitutes lawful political speech and what doesn't. For more information on how to amend the Johnson Amendment, visit frc.org/Johnson Amendment. That's frc.org/Johnson Amendment.
You experienced a call to ministry later in life, and now you're in a second career. You like to call it your calling. You know you need more preparation, but how? Where? Hello, I'm John Nyhoff, president of Wesley Biblical Seminary in Jackson, Mississippi, where an online Master of Divinity degree can be tailor-made for you. Small class size, individual attention, learning opportunities that fit your busy schedule. Wesley Biblical Seminary, where we equip the called. WBS.edu.
Consider serving the Lord with friendships. It's an opportunity to reach out to the needy around the world. They're now taking applications to volunteer, and they need help in the areas of mechanics, maritime, including deck, engine, and steward departments, food service, warehousing, and office. Check it out at friendships.org or call 337-433-5022.
This is a Decency Minute. I'm Bill Johnson. What's even better than the Macy's Thanksgiving Day Parade? The fact that this nationwide chain of department stores told Pro-Life Group Second Vote that they no longer give nor match donations to Planned Parenthood. Planned Parenthood, a leading participant in the Holocaust against the unborn, receives $1.3 billion in yearly revenue, with over 25% of that coming from private donations, including corporate contributions. After Second Vote's research exposed 41 companies with direct financial ties to the abortion giant last year, AT&T, Coca-Cola, Ford, and Xerox publicly distanced themselves from Planned Parenthood. Now, thankfully, we can add Macy's to this parade for life. Spread the word that these companies are taking a stand against a culture of death. Pray that others will join this parade for life. This is a Decency Minute. I'm Bill Johnson.
It's beginning to look a lot like Christmas everywhere you go. Take a look in the 5 and 10, glistening once again with candy canes and silver lanes aglow.
Oh my goodness, that sounds like Bing Crosby. Sandy Rios back with you. This is Washington Watch, but it is Christmas time, and it is fun, is it not, to just think about, I was just thinking, some people want to destroy Western civilization. They actually want to do away with all notions of Christmas. And of course, the meaning of Christmas is the birth of Jesus, of course. But we have wonderful traditions that come out of our Western heritage, and some people want to destroy that. I remember the first Christmas, my husband and I lived together in Washington, D.C., and we were a little bit lonely. And so we thought, well, we're from Chicago originally, which is always gorgeous at Christmas time, just beautiful. If you've ever been to downtown Chicago during Christmas, if not, you should go. So we said to ourselves, let's go sort of see the Christmas lights in Washington. And we drove around, and this was 2010, I think. So, could I just say there were no lights? Those beautiful arches of the bridges going between Northern Virginia and the district, nothing. You know, one small tree on the lawn of the Capitol. Of course, there's the White House Christmas tree. Yep. You go downtown, and maybe a few businesses would have a smattering of lights, but basically nothing. It's just amazing. The effect of a non-religious people on something that you just take for granted, and that is the celebration of this Christmas season, and it is something that we need to fight to keep. Well, all right. The left is busy making up terms. They always have been. They are fabulous propagandists, and they learned a lot of it from the European communists who perfected it. Saul Alinsky also perfected it. It was a couple of things. It's words. It's also accusing your enemy of doing what you're doing. Just accuse them. I think, did Freud call that projection? But the communists took that and, you know, made an art out of it. And then, of course, the American left has done a really good job, too. They have come up with all kinds of terms. You know, let's see. When it came to the abortion issue, those of us that were against abortion were anti-abortion, anti-women's choice. You know, I think of all the bills that come up in Washington who have such great names, and they generally, the names are the opposite of what they actually do. And recently they've come up with the term alt-right. Alt-right, oh boy, whatever the alt-right is. I'm sure it's a term that's been around, but now they're trying to brand it. And of course, it's pretty much mainstream America. They want mainstream America to be like Nazis, like white supremacists. But really, it's kind of normal to hold the viewpoint that the left assesses to the alt-right. And then they have a new one, and that's the one I want to talk about right now, and that's the whole fake news. It's fake news. And they all have the same playbook, so now we're hearing this about fake news. And of course, the fake news, is that all the things that you learned about Mrs. Clinton during the election, all those terrible things about the Clinton Foundation, and that was just fake news. And you see it on your Facebook posts, it comes in your feed, and it's terrible. It swung the election and it allowed this terrible, horrible Donald Trump, the white supremacist, I'm exaggerating only slightly, to be elected. And it's because you got fed fake news. And now we must do something about that. And they, ladies and gentlemen, intend to do that. Hillary Clinton, of course, played her part in this. In fact, she made an appearance just in the past week or so in Washington, and this is how she framed it. Let's listen.
Let me just mention briefly one threat in particular that should concern all Americans, Democrats, Republicans, and independents alike, especially those who serve in our Congress. The epidemic of malicious fake news and false propaganda that flooded social media over the past year. It's now clear that so-called fake news can have real-world consequences. This isn't about politics or partisanship. Lives are at risk. Lives of ordinary people just trying to go about their days to do their jobs, contribute to their communities. It's a danger that must be addressed and addressed quickly. Bipartisan legislation is making its way through Congress to boost the government's response to foreign propaganda, and Silicon Valley is starting to grapple with the challenge and threat of fake news. It's imperative that leaders in both the private sector and the public sector step up to protect our democracy and innocent lives.
All right, so on and on she goes, and fake news. So then you're hearing it over and over again, fake news. I want to make some points with this as clearly as I can. We kept hearing this orchestrated use of that term, not by Mrs. Clinton, just by Mrs. Clinton, but by all kinds of outlets. CNN was one of them. In fact, we should hear just a second of this CNN report on an incident that happened, I think, the beginning of last week. Pizzagate, did you hear it? Let's listen, and listen for the fake news thing.
Fake news, real gunfire. A North Carolina man arrested in a D.C. pizza shop after brandishing a gun, telling police he was there to investigate a conspiracy theory called Pizzagate.
One of the
hosts. That's CNN. They made a big deal of that. So, you know, after all the news outlets started using the term fake news, fake news, fake news, fake news, you cannot trust what you've been hearing. And that's the reason Donald Trump won, because you heard all this fake news. And poor Hillary said that there are, real world consequences. She should know. Well, I tell you something, she should know about fake news, because the left is in the business of fake news. As I said, their modus operandi is to accuse others of exactly what they are guilty about. You know, Sheriff David Clark was on television last week. He said the hands up, don't shoot was one, at least in this cycle, what that story out of Ferguson was one of the first fake news pieces they talked about. And then, of course, there's Dan Rather, who told us he had a document that proved that George W. Bush had evaded the draft. And then, of course, we had Brian Williams, who made up a story about being in a helicopter during being shot at. That was a fake news story. And we could go on and on with the fake news of the left. In fact, Hillary Clinton herself is a queen of fake news. I want to go back to Cheryl Atkinson when she was still with CBS. She did a report on Mrs. Clinton's claim that she was shot at as First Lady of the United States when she was landing in Bosnia with her daughter. Let's listen.
It was supposed to be an example of Hillary Clinton's battle-tested experience.
I remember landing under sniper fire.
In the speech last week, Senator Clinton was referring to her visit to Tuzla, Bosnia in 1996 as First Lady. The brutal war was over, but hostilities continued. And though the trip was exactly 12 years ago tomorrow, the memory seemed etched in Clinton's mind.
There was supposed to be some kind of a greeting ceremony at the airport, but instead we just ran with our heads down to get into the vehicles to get to our base.
Problem is, that's not what happened. And we should know, CBS News accompanied the First Lady and daughter Chelsea on that Bosnia trip. That's Senator Clinton talking to me on the military flight into Tuzla. And these are the pictures we recorded of the greeting ceremony when the plane landed. Compare that to Senator Clinton's account.
I remember landing under sniper fire. There was no greeting ceremony, and we basically were told to run to our cars. Now that is what happened.
Thank you.
There was no sniper fire either when Senator Clinton visited two Army outposts where she posed for photos, and no sniper fire back at the base.
Last night I
where she sang at a USO show starring Sinbad and Sheryl Crow.
I can't cry no more.
Referring to the CBS News video, Clinton aides today acknowledged her arrival in Bosnia was not quite as dramatic as Clinton put it.
She meant that there was fire in the hillside around the area when we landed, which was the case.
Who knows if she misremembered, misspoke, exaggerated. Whatever, it makes the case for Senator Obama that all this experience that she's been talking about is at least partly her imagination.
Hundreds of thousands have viewed the video online in just the past few days, a reminder that in politics, memory should always match the videotape. Cheryl Atkinson, CBS News.
All right, so that's just one example. We could go back just with Mrs. Clinton specifically. Does anybody remember that she said that when she decided if she's going to go into politics, she should join the Marines, but they wouldn't let her because she was a woman? Turns out, not true at all. In fact, by her own words, it was a fake account. Remember anyone that she blamed repeatedly? A video for the attack in Benghazi? She had the gall to claim it was a video to the parents over the caskets of their loved ones at Andrews Air Force Base. She had the gall later to deny that she'd said that. She had the gall to deny that she'd told the parents individually, Tyrone Woods and the father of mother of Sean Smith, that she was going to get that video producer. They were going to make sure they made him that he was punished. And of course they did. They arrested him. He was held for a very long time. It's a disgraceful thing. But there was another bit of fake news. She knew it was a terrorist attack. She knew it that night. She actually emailed her, and we know now because of the leaked emails that she told her daughter that night. Fake news. And remember that she said she never sent or received classified email on her homemade server. And we remember that the FBI director contradicted her. That was not true. We could go on and on with the fake news that Mrs. Clinton has generated. And she joins the ranks of Brian Williams, the liar, and Dan Rather, the liar. I could go back to Walter Cronkite. Walter Cronkite was the supposedly most trusted name in news. And we found out from one of the doctors who was an abortionist in times past, right after Roe versus Wade. His name is escaping me in this moment, but he had a dramatic conversion to life and told that he was at the table when they made these plans to make up the number of coat hanger abortions. That they figured the Roe versus Wade case was based on a completely false case, a lie. So was Doe versus Bolton, the companion case that made abortion illegal for all 9 months. The left knows all about fake news. And they all know all about lying, and now it is very much the pot calling the kettle black. But it is actually more serious than just that. You have to understand that this is going to have real consequences. And if they get their toe in the door, meaning the left, if they get their toe in the door of letting this get some traction, if they have their way, they will shut down all the sources of information that you use now. Let me give you an illustration of what I mean. They are, of course, the Washington Post did an article citing all what they call fake news sites. And many of them were sites that I'm sure that you go to right now. The list, I don't have the list in front of me, but there's a whole list of them. You can Google it and find it. And they tried to make something out of supposedly who was doing fake news. Turns out that this committee, this entity that the Washington Post gave a name to, would not reveal their sources, would not reveal their methodology, just were making these claims that these sources were fake news. One of the sources, I think it's Naked Capitalism, is actually threatening to sue the Washington Post for that report, because they have nothing to base that on. All right, so now Mark Zuckerberg of Facebook has announced that he's planning on introducing what he considers trusted news. And that process will be that he'll have a little committee, and they'll decide what it is that they think all of you who do Facebook should know. and it will appear in your feeds. And Facebook, along with Twitter, YouTube, and Microsoft have agreed that they're going to start censoring what happens on their sites. It's already happening. I might add, I could give you several examples. But this is not coming from nowhere. This is coming from a move internationally to employ speech codes internationally. This is why some of us were fighting turning over the control of the internet to international bodies. The European Commission has been slamming Facebook, Twitter, YouTube, and Microsoft because they feel they're not doing enough to deal with hate speech online. Now, hate speech, according to the European Commission, is anything that criticizes Islam. Remember the President of the United States, Barack Obama, going to the UN shortly after he was reelected the last time, saying that the future does not belong to those that criticize the prophet? Well, what you might not know is that the European community, along with the UN, is working to implement codes that would prevent the free expression of any criticism of Islam. That seems to be their main concern. But of course, it also bleeds into what they call homophobia, with another word that they've penned. They love these words, which, you know, if you have a traditional view of marriage, you're alt-right. And I have to tell you, ladies and gentlemen, we are the center and heart of this country. Those of you that listen to this program, listen to Tony Perkins every night, listen to American Family Radio, we are the Americans with the mainstream view. We are not the alt-right. And so my suggestion is that you resist those titles and those labels. When you hear the term fake news, just know that you are probably hearing a fake news story about fake news. And you have to be so careful about your sources. Right now, we have sources that we can trust. You probably have your favorite sources. And I always say something obvious to us, that the truth is what comports with reality. I think that's why Donald Trump did so well in this election, because people finally are understanding that what they're hearing, like if you like your doctor, you can keep your doctor, that your health care costs are going to go down, that the economy is thriving, that there are many jobs being created, all of those things don't comport with reality. The truth is what comports with reality. You know, anyone can say anything, and any news outlet can claim anything. But if it doesn't comport with reality, then it is fake news. It is just not true. And we need to fight so that America can still have access to information. You know, the Soviet Union for 60 years was in a black hole. And all the Russian people, the Soviet people, heard was the news feed out of Radio Moscow. It was complete control. That's all they knew. And yet there was a lot of humor that came out of the Soviet Union because they just knew they were being lied to. But they didn't have an alternative source unless it was Radio America. And that was in limited Voice of America. That was in limited areas. So we don't want to go there. We want our news to be free. We want to be able to decide who we can trust and who we can't. And so that's just my word on fake news for tonight. Hey, it is Christmas time, and we know the truth is that Jesus Christ, the Son of God, was born, and the truth embodied in that baby will set us free. Thanks for listening. Sandy Rios filling in for Tony Perkins on Washington Watch.
Washington Watch with Tony Perkins is a production of the Family Research Council in Washington, D.C. For more information on anything you heard today, or if you'd like to find out how you can support the ongoing efforts of the Family Research Council, visit TonyPerkins.com. Also, to leave a comment about Washington Watch, call our new watch line at 1-866-372-7234. That's 1-866-372-7234.